So we don't want to tell you everything you may have heard through the past week on the state of the world economy. We're more interested in what it actually means for you and me and our jobs and our money and our mortgages. Have low interest rates gone, not to return, and have a lot of people been pushed to the edge of the risk curve by policies designed to avoid what has now arrived? We've probably heard or read the headlines, at least from institutions warning about recession. Other commentators online are more shrill. Geoffrey Halley's joining us again, sooner than usual, actually, after his last chat. Geoffrey's a Kiwi who alternates between Jakarta and Singapore as the senior market analyst Asia-Pacific for the Oanda Corporation. And his analysis is regularly sought by Bloomberg, the BBC, Reuters, CNBC, The New York Times. Kia ora, Geoffrey. Good to talk again.
Good morning. Wonderful to be here.
Thank you for being here. First of all, the share markets. The bull walks up the stairs. I didn't know this saying, but I do now. The bull walks up the stairs and then the bear comes down on a fast elevator. Is that what's happening? How long will the year of the bear last, please?
Yeah, I've heard a few iterations of that. Mine's up by the stairs and out by the fourth floor window.
Right.
It doesn't always work out that way, to be honest, but it has been a tough week. And the main reason for that is, of course, we've seen the Federal Reserve hiking interest rates and with a very hawkish outlook. But it's not just them. We've seen the Bank of England. We've seen the Swiss National Bank of all banks raising rates by 0.5%. And this is really impacting on the valuation outlook for stock markets. So the basic rule is that the higher the fixed interest rate is that you use, the lower the earnings go in the future, thus the lower the stock price. So we're in a period now where banks or central banks around the world are chasing their tails, racing to catch up with inflation that they thought was transitory but clearly isn't anymore. So I think the rest of this year is going to be a challenging environment for stock markets.
2 years is typical for a bear market, I read. 30% off peak is possible.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we're already talking about 20% plus falls, and it's worse than some other markets. Hong Kong's down 30% year to date, I thought year on year as well. So certainly is possible, but I get the feeling these days that things move a lot quicker, and that's probably due to technology. So I'm not quite sure it's going to take us 2 years to get there, though, and thus I don't know necessarily whether it's going to be 2 years before stocks rise again.
It shades it for 1987, in a sense, all the little share groups back then that sprang up around New Zealand. And a great many people have hopped onto the online trading platforms now, and they may be seeing portfolio drops of 40% from the peak, maybe 10% down on their investments, original investments. So if people have a lot more money in shares or crypto, as with a lot of the young, there is no good advice, Geoffrey, other than waiting it out and crossing fingers?
Well, cryptos, I have a very strong opinion on. To me, the cryptos, well, let's just circle back a bit. So we've seen asset price inflation over the last 2 years, and that's all been driven by these huge fiscal transfers by governments over the pandemic, but mostly by interest rates being slashed to 0% across the world, and then all this quantitative easing filling the system with money. That money had to go somewhere. It went into asset markets. All that money going in has pushed those prices up. So I would argue that the gains of the last 2 years were extra normal and they were never going to last because they were artificially induced. Now, the crypto space to me is the worst example of that speculative fervor, and the fall to earth there, I believe, will be particularly painful. From my own point of view, I've always told listeners that cryptos are perhaps a tradable asset rather than an investable asset. And those are two very different things.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before. You read people talk online about waiting for the bottom and buying into the markets again, or with property investment, waiting for the mortgagee sales in November, which always sounds quite ghoulish. How hard is it to pick the bottom?
It is almost impossible to pick the bottom, and that's me with trading, running trading desks, being a trader for international organisations and financial markets. It's very, very rare that you pick the bottom. You'll be almost certainly buying on the way down or buying on the way back up. The chances of you getting the absolute low are infinitesimal. And it's the story that you tell people over a beer in a pub. It's not real life. I would say to your listeners that it's important to stay focused on your investing horizons. And this is the same for Kiwi savers as well. Investing in the markets is a multi-year process where you look to create gains over a long time horizon. When we look at March 2020, when the pandemic first really hit the world and it started to close down, we saw a 30% drop in stock markets, and they rebounded quite quickly. Artificially, but they rebounded quite quickly. So I would say that you don't want to try and pick the bottom, but if those stocks that you really, really like because you've researched them properly are 40% lower now than what they were from their bull market heights, then, you know, on a long-term basis, maybe it's not bad a bad reason to start looking to get into them.
Yeah, unless you're really short of money. Okay.
Unless you're really short of money.
Our house prices continue to fall. Sales are down nearly 30% on a year ago, and I saw a forecast of an 18% drop in value. It's apparently 6% off peak here at the moment. People with big mortgages who got in at the height of the market hopefully have them still fixed lower. But this could be a crisis in the making if interest rates stay high, couldn't it?
It could place borrowers who got in at the very top into some stress. Now, it depends on their own individual financial situations. Now, we get this even in normal markets, and we see it in business all the time as well. And one of the downstream effects of this quantitative easing and ZERP policies around the world, it has been an increase in leverage, unfortunately. So there will always be casualties. But I think New Zealand's in not such a bad place here. Even if the property markets fall 15%, the amount of equity that people have had if they've been long through this whole process, the gains are still outsized compared to what has been lost on a theoretical basis. And also the banks themselves have been quite conservative with their lending. The Reserve Bank Board and macroprudential rules a few years ago to make sure that we didn't get anything silly going on in the sector. And the stress test that the banks used interest rate-wise to meet payments mean I believe that, you know, this is a bit more doom and gloom than it really is. Yes, house prices still are probably going to fall some way. And yes, some borrowers, unfortunately, will find themselves in stress. But I think for the vast majority of the country, that's not going to be the case. Where it will impact is consumer demand, because higher mortgage payments mean less discretionary income, which means slowing consumer demand in the wider economy.
Yes, and people say, well, it's just bringing prices back to where they should be. But New Zealanders weren't adjusting their living and spending in anticipation of a correction, were they? And there you have a big knock-on effect, don't you, involving debt possibly right there.
Yeah, I think this is where it could get a bit emotional, was the debt that households are carrying outside of their mortgage payments. And you're right. I mean, I was back in New Zealand for most of January and February, and I've never seen so many big new cars on the road. When New Zealanders have spent so much on all these luxury goods or discretionary goods, shall we call them, and the cost of living for basics is going up at the same time, and mortgage rates are going up at the same time, inevitably the consumer's discretionary spending ability will be squeezed, and that will flow through to a slowdown in the economy. And that is what I think is going to happen in the second half of this year for New Zealand.
Can you squeeze out inflation by hiking your cash rate if you're also at the mercy of global forces like we are right now, Geoffrey?
Yes and no is the answer to that one, which isn't a very good answer. Some parts of the inflation equation are out of New Zealand's control. Small country at the bottom of the world, small market, huge logistics chain. It's a very difficult situation for central banks to be in, not just the Reserve Bank in New Zealand, but also central banks around the world. So you can either raise interest rates, but then potentially see the domestic economy slump, or you can sit there and do nothing and go, there's nothing we can do about it. And then inflation rises, and then everybody's ability to spend is eroded by the inflation, which actually ends up having the same effect in the long term. now we're seeing around the world that they're very, very concerned that inflation for the first time in over 20 years is becoming entrenched in the global economy again.
I said in the introduction that there's quite shrill opinion online, not so much in mainstream media, but inflation can rapidly turn into hyperinflation, yes or no, do you think?
Mostly no, to be honest, yeah. And the reason that we get hyperinflation is usually because the governments issue so much debt and flood the economy with so much money. So they print money because they can't pay their bills. So they just print money to pay it. They do that so high that the currency becomes debased and worthless. Now, those are usually special situations that you see in, say, Venezuela or Brazil in the past, or Germany after World War One, or Zimbabwe. We're not there. So I foresee a period of high inflation, but it takes a real shock to turn things and economic mismanagement on a huge scale to turn the situation into hyperinflation. So I don't think this is an issue right now.
China's economy may be heading south as it battles COVID in Beijing this time, with a million people being tested and thousands locked down. And of course, their housing market's not in good shape, as you said last time, I think. 30% of our economy's eggs are in the China basket, dairy, logs and meat. Is there risk for us?
There's a potential through supply chain logistic issues. But I think the important thing here is that New Zealand exports things that people need to use, whether the economies in our export markets are in a recession or not. People need to eat. People need to build things out of wood. And that's why I believe that New Zealand, and even more so Australia, are doing okay in that respect at the moment. China has 1.3 billion people to feed, and New Zealand produces food that we send to China. That's not going to change. So, yeah, it could slow down through other issues, but I think from an export point of view, our primary exports are going to hold up fairly well, even if the global economy slows down.
The global economy does seem to be slowing down from all the stats. I noticed BNZ's head of research saying New Zealand could see a recession at the end of this year or early 2023. And many people are saying expect a 2022 rally of sorts and then a plunge next year. How does that accord with what you're seeing?
I do believe that there is a fairly high chance that New Zealand's going to suffer a fairly sharp slowdown in the second half of this year. But this will be a domestic consumption led slowdown. It won't be because our export markets have collapsed. The conflict between Russia and the Ukraine has caused food inflation and energy inflation, etc., all around the world, and that will make ensure that New Zealand's primary exports are in high demand no matter what happens internationally. The thesis that the markets will rally and then drop again in 2023, I don't really subscribe to that. I believe that the slowdown in New Zealand and other parts of the world and this correction of this asset price exuberance from the last 2 years will mean that a lot of asset price markets, asset markets, including stock markets, will correct lower, and then they will stay at a low level for the rest of this year because central banks are going to keep tightening interest rates around the world, squeezing consumer demand, apart from all these other external factors. And we could see that extend right through into 2023. Now, if central banks start getting on top of inflation in the second half of 2023 and start cutting rates again, that's when I think we could start seeing a material rally reoccurring in asset price markets. But I think the most likely case now is that we're going to see a correction lower and then flat markets through the next year. I think over the last 20 years, we've been conditioned to central banks always backstopping negative moves in markets such as stock markets and the housing market. That's not going to happen now because we have inflation in the system for the first time in 20 plus years, and thus the central banks can't backstop those moves anymore.
I think part of the reason for the optimism was that people like our Reserve Bank thought inflation would peak this month here. But it doesn't look like peaking, does it? In fact, nobody knows, do they?
Yeah, look, everybody's got it wrong. Every central bank certainly got it wrong. When you look at the Federal Reserve, ECB, Reserve Bank of New Zealand, Reserve Bank of Australia, the list goes on. They've all got it completely wrong. They're all saying transitory and it would drop. Now, part of this is out of their hands too. The Russia-Ukraine conflict has sent a stagflationary wave of price squeezes and increases through some very key commodities in the world, energy and food being just two of them. And that's complicated that picture. But really, inflation was looking a lot more entrenched and it never looked transitory at all. And I'd been saying this for the last year. Others have as well. That's how it's turned out to be. Now they're playing catch up to try and get on top of that situation. So, yes, inflation could potentially peak in the second half of this year as these price increases drop out of the CPI calculations. But my feeling is that what we're going to see is a sideways period of high inflation. It may not go up, but it probably isn't going to come down until 2023.
Last time we had stagflation, have I got this right? It was because of a rapid rise in the price of oil in 1973 and the government increased its spending. And because of inflation, the amount spent in real terms didn't grow much, apparently. What did grow were average wages by 15% in 73, 28% in 74. And I'm sure it's different this time. I mean, the whole nature of employment's changed for a start. But we still have a kind of concatenation of interconnected problems in the world. So what will stagflation seem like for most of us?
It'll seem really annoying in one word. You know, that's what we call a wage price spiral, by the way. So there's no way that anybody's getting a 25% cost of living adjustment on their wages. You're right, the world has changed. What we're going to see is this feeling each day when we go to work or live our lives that prices have gone up from the week before, but we look at our pay packet and it's going less and less further. You know, prices might go up 20%, our pay goes up 7%. We're still 13% in the negative there, if that makes sense. And that's what stagflation does. It erodes the spending power of the consumer and the government.
I'll let you go, but actually speaking of erosion of spending power, I mean, ANZ's raised its serious saver interest rate to 1.5, I think. Why in these times don't returns from banks approximate better to the inflation rate?
I'm so glad you asked this question. You can get 3%, you can get 3.7% on deposit in New Zealand, and you can get it for amounts as small as $1,000 when you do a bit of checking around. But you need to put that money into the bank for 12 months or longer. So the actual term deposit rates, sort of your 12-month, 1 year, 2 year, three, four years, they're all sitting pretty much above 3%. And in the nine-month tenor, it's about 2.5, 2.7%. You will never get a lot of money, a lot of interest, I should say, for your money if you leave it on call in the bank. 99% of the time, it's far better to put your money on term deposit to get higher rates than it is to leave it sort of 0 to 6 months in the bank. And part of the reason for this is that banks themselves have a loan portfolio which goes out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. And those term deposits, they match against those loans. It's part of their balance sheet management. So if they're lending at 5.5% in a mortgage for 3 years, and you put your money at on for 3 years, they will match that three-year deposit against that three-year loan, if that makes sense. You'll get a much better rate. Also, the yield curve is positive, so rates are lower at the short end and higher at the long end. So I think if Kiwis want to get better deposit rates, they need to look at putting their money in the bank for longer than 12 months, and they'll certainly be getting above 3% at that stage.
The message I'm getting is put the covers over your head and re-emerge in 2024.
That is actually probably one of the smartest things I've heard, actually. And I think that's it. I think you should invest for the long term and not the short term. And there's no shame in holding more cash in the bank. And as you said, putting up the covers and waiting the whole thing out.
Geoffrey, thank you as always for your time. I appreciate you giving it to us. And thanks for the chat.
I love doing this program and thank you very much for inviting me, Jim.
Geoffrey Halley.